Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The Wall Street Journal this weekend starts right after this. Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates, cool features, and popular apps, you can get your business online today. Start now at Wix.com. That's Wix.com.
Direct from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal this weekend with Gordon Deal.
Behind the new social media craze, I'm Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. Last full weekend in August. Welcome in. Here's what we have for you during this program.
The ALS Ice Bucket Challenge has taken Facebook by storm. It's hard to look at your feed and not see a friend doing it. But which American city is the epicenter?
More hospitals are adopting a new trend that they say promotes healing and patient satisfaction. We'll explain it in about 10 minutes.
The one thing dads might do that can inspire their daughters to choose a career in one of the STEM fields: science, technology, engineering, or math.
And how about an infrared camera accessory for your iPhone 5?
You've got a water leak. If your air conditioning system or heating system is bleeding out either through the ducting or through the windows or doors, it'll identify that. It'll showcase mold, because mold tends to be hotter than the surrounding area. It can show you that where mold's growing and other problems like that that can result in significant problems if you don't catch them in time.
Tech analyst Rob Enderle discusses the accessory from FLIR called the FLIR One. He's here later in the hour. How about these numbers? Over the past 20 years, authorities have made more than a quarter of a billion arrests in the United States. It's between 10,000 and 12,000 new names being added each day to a master criminal database. Here's the problem, though. Publicly available arrest records don't always tell you what happened next. Wall Street Journal reporter Gary Fields says many people who have never faced charges or have had the charges dropped or were arrested by mistake find that a lingering arrest record can ruin their chance to secure things like employment, loans, housing. Gary, what have you found?
Well, when we go into the files that are held by the federal government, we're finding that there are 77.7 million individuals that are actually listed in those criminal files. You know, so that's roughly the equivalent of about one-third of the entire adult population of the United States actually has a criminal record, at least as it is defined by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which holds on to the records. What actually makes it more interesting is those files don't necessarily have the final dispositions in them, which means, you know, you've got roughly 38 million people who may have actually been cut loose, whose charges may have been dropped, where maybe a case wasn't pursued, or who may have even been acquitted, who are still listed as having a criminal record. And that has some major league implications, since so much of our society, governmental entities, businesses, and everybody else is doing background checks these days.
So someone could get arrested, have the charges dropped, but the records might only show the arrest?
Yes, and where that gets very complicated is it then puts an additional amount of pressure on a company, which, you know, they go to these records. If you're calling the FBI, you're figuring, okay, everything's fine. That's as far as I have to go. But no, you have to take some further steps if you're a company, or you could, you know, leave yourself open for some liabilities because, you know, frankly, you haven't taken enough steps and done due diligence to make sure you're checking to see what the dispositions are. So the files are, as somebody described to me, he says, this is the best of the worst system because we're using these things, you know, 80% of the time, 80% of employers are actually using these. And the FBI files specifically are what governmental entities use, you know, for everything from checking on, you know, foster care parents to job applicants.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Gary Fields. Anything an individual might be able to do if they've had an erroneous arrest record to make sure their information's correct?
It's unfortunately not that simple, or as simple as we'd like for it to be. First off, you have to actually know that you have the record. You know, because I've got some folks who, you know, for instance, one woman, you know, in a story who was actually picked up with someone else who was shoplifting back in 1963. And She was let go. The Philadelphia police took her into custody. They let her go, you know, once they got there and realized what had happened. Somehow, those fingerprints managed to work their way into the FBI database to where when she went to apply for a job just last year, you know, a part-time job to supplement her Social Security, working at a school cafeteria, the record popped up and it flagged. And frankly, that employer didn't go a heck of a lot further in trying to pursue, you know, whether or not these things were accurate or whatever. So this woman has now spent, you know, we're rolling into month 10 trying to actually just find the initial record to see if she can't get it expunged. And expungements are actually legal, legal proceedings that you have to go through. You have to get a lawyer. You know, for the most part, they cost money and those kind of things. In her particular case, it's complicated by the fact that nobody can actually find the initial record to expunge it, to therefore then call the FBI to say, take it out of your master file.
Wow. Thanks, Gary. Wall Street Journal reporter Gary Fields. This is somewhat 52 years ago, something like that. 12 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Weekend.
As the owner of a delivery company, I have to be in constant contact with my drivers, the warehouse, and my customers. Between scheduling appointments, using GPS, and tracking orders on our smartphones and tablets, we were going way over our data limit every month. That's why I switched to T-Mobile's Simple Choice for Business Plan. My company gets all the data we need without worrying about unpredictable overage charges. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only, subject to change.
Hey, glad you're with us. Hospitals are turning to art as part of a broader push to create a healing environment. New evidence indicates that visual art can help reduce stress for patients, improve health outcomes, and increase satisfaction with care. Here's Wall Street Journal health writer Laura Landreau. Laura, what are we seeing?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Actually, hospitals have had art for centuries. You know, you saw the religious art. There's actually a wonderful book called The Healing Power of Art, which shows these, you know, coffee table book with lots and lots of beautiful images from, you know, times past. But now hospitals are really starting to look at this sort of as an evidence-based approach, much the way that they would approach, you know, medical treatment by looking at the evidence. And they're looking at more studies that have come out in recent years about how the actual content of the visual image that people see in a hospital can impact things like stress, anxiety, fear, pain, all of those things. And they're really finding that the way you choose images can actually, you know, help in outcomes.
So what kind of art are we talking about? Local stuff here or specific artists?
Well, you know, unless it's donated by some rich benefactor, you're obviously not going to see too much museum quality stuff. But in fact, you look at something like the Cleveland Clinic, they have an amazing art collection with a lot of well-known artists. I've got thousands of pieces. They, you know, you can do an art tour there. They have, you know, a lot of hospitals have created books, the Mayo Clinic in Rochester in Florida. A lot of the big healthcare institutions now have art. They have curators. They have, you know, art institutes. They jury and select things from artists when they put a call out for works. But the most interesting thing is it's not so much that art in hospitals are new, but in the way that they're thinking about art, whether the subject matter and the, you know, the media and the imagery and the environment really, you know, can play the significant role. Researchers have studied how people react to art. There was a review of a lot of studies, and it really showed all these articles that have done on the emotional states, you know, to understand how visual characteristics of an image have an impact on your brain's behavior. It's not surprising that soothing images can really make people feel better. Nature is a big thing. People love to look at nature, and it really calms them. But they've actually also found that, you know, abstract art, something really maybe disturbing or, you know, provocative or ambiguous, things that you might look at a museum and say, wow, that's really interesting, those might not be the best things for the hospital.
Okay.
You know, there's been a lot of research into actually showing that some abstract works actually disturb people.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal health writer Laura Landreau. She's got a story about hospitals turning to art more and more to promote healing. I'm curious, does the location of the art matter? Like, does it have to be in a room, or is it, you know, to cover up plain white hallways, or what?
Well, obviously, you know, it's much better to look at this stuff in the halls than look at these sterile, long, white corridors. But, you know, there are different ways to approach this. A lot of hospitals will put posters into things in the halls, things in the lobby, things in surgical suites. You know, you'll see things in the waiting rooms of outpatient facilities. So, and in patients' rooms, you might see videos. You might be able to get a continuous loop of video art. That's a big thing now, you know, kind of sequential, continuous loops of beautiful imagery that you might want to watch on your television. They used to bring art carts around that people could choose art. Unfortunately, with all the concern about infection spread, they don't do that as much anymore, but they might give, you know, patients a few pictures and say, would you like this to hang in your room for, you know, a few, you know, days while you're here? You know, of course, the other big thing is, and this is separate, but it also kind of is in the general idea, more hospitals do things like art therapy. They might have musical performances. They'll have local dance troupes come in and, you know, do things. And I think people really like that, and they appreciate it. A lot of the patients that we spoke to really, you know, felt that this helped them kind of get over the fear of even coming into the building in the first place.
Thanks, Laura. Wall Street Journal health writer Laura Landreau, who's based in New York. It is 19 minutes now after the hour. On the Wall Street Journal this weekend, time now for Gina Cervetti.
And this next week brings more housing market updates. PNC's Gus Fauché says he's upbeat about new home sales.
I think that the conditions remain pretty good for the housing market. We saw an 8% decline in June. I think we'll make up at least some of that. And I do think that we'll see new home sales improve throughout the rest of this year.
We also get reports on home prices and pending home sales. Recent data on sales of previously owned homes, meanwhile, showed an almost 2.5% gain in July. Our consumer prices edged up in July, thanks in large part to food costs. Costs overall declined for the first time since March, in energy, that is. Our prices are up 2% over the past 12 months. The World Health Organization says that it's drawn up a draft strategy to combat Ebola in West Africa over the next 6 to 9 months. Asked whether that means the UN agency expects the epidemic to continue into next year, a spokeswoman said that, frankly, no one knows when the outbreak will end. Apple suppliers are scrambling to get enough screens ready for the new iPhone 6 as the need to redesign a key component disrupted panel production ahead of next month's expected launch. Reuters said it was unclear if this could actually delay the launch or limit availability. Hey, dads, a new study suggests that sharing the housework with mom can have a big impact on the types of careers chosen by your daughters. Doing so led daughters to choose careers in things like astronomy as an astronaut or as an engineer.
If they didn't pitch in at home, the girls tended to still pursue more traditional female careers. But if they sort of pitched in and did their share of the work, those daughters looked towards unconventional type careers.
The Journal's Ann Lukett says fathers helping around the house may be sending the message that you can go out and work as hard and as long as you need to, because when you get home, there will be help. Are you on vacation but still working between trips to the beach or the golf course? TripAdvisor finds that 77% of us said we've worked on vacation. Compare that with about 40% in other countries. About half of Americans said they didn't mind doing some work, but 44% said they preferred to be entirely unplugged.
I don't actually like being entirely unplugged.
It's kind of hard these days. Everybody carries a smartphone.
Right.
And if you check your email and you happen to see something from work,
that's right,
you're stuck.
Right. If you're a conscientious employee, too, how do you avoid not addressing it, right?
But I think there's something to being entirely unplugged, I got to say.
I think so, too. I look forward to trying it one day. Never. 22 minutes after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend. Ever consider matching up your dreams from high school with today's reality? The videos recorded by the class of 2004 as seniors at the York School in Monterey, California, elicited plenty of laughter and eye rolls when alums viewed them at their 10-year reunion recently. There were also cringeworthy moments, but Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenberger says their adolescent monologues also struck a serious chord because they graduated from college 4 years later into the jaws of a recession. Sue, tell us about the York School tradition.
They have a very unusual tradition of video recording seniors in the fall of their senior year about their goals, hopes, and dreams, and then replaying those for the alum when they return for their 10-year reunion. I visited while the former students were watching their videos, and it was fascinating to see them react to what they had believed in the past before they embarked on a very turbulent decade of what was a very difficult time for many of them.
Did they remember what they had said?
Most of them did not, and some of them were pretty conservative because they didn't want to state goals that they might not reach and then be embarrassed 10 years later. Some of them were remarkably accurate. A couple of them just nailed it. They were doing exactly what they had hoped, which was really very impressive.
That is impressive. Like what, for example? Who was doing it?
There was one young man wanted to have a successful job, someone to love and who loved him in return, and to be working in the creative arts. He had a very rough time of it. He graduated in art, built a portfolio, got into a very good master's of fine arts program, and couldn't get a job teaching in college. It took him 2 years of working really hard, and he finally did land a tenure track position. And along the way, he met the young woman that he loves, and he's looking back. He says, you know, I wish I hadn't focused so much on success, and I'd paid more attention to failing well and learning from your mistakes. So he was a very thoughtful young man.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger about what the class of 2004 has learned 10 years later. All right, so give an example, I guess, where somebody just did a complete swing and a miss or completely had false expectations.
There was one young woman who really didn't have a clue. She, in her video, she said, you know, I don't know what I'm going to be doing. And she was perhaps the most remarkable success story of all. She was a late bloomer, which I think is a lesson that can be taken from this. She went to college. She didn't get into her first choice college, but she went anyway and added a business major to her psychology major to be practical. She got an internship right under the finish line for the recession, just barely made it in, and still working at that company. She also wanted to be a professional dancer. So she changed from ballet to hip-hop in college, and she landed a position on the dance team for a professional lacrosse team in Seattle. She really achieved all of her dreams, and she's studying for an MBA now. She was surprised to see how vague she was as a senior. She said, you know, I think I would tell my younger self, it really doesn't, don't worry if you don't have a plan. There's so much happens in the 10 years after high school, and you mature so much. It's really okay. So I liked her story.
That seems to be a theme. I think that's the second time you've mentioned it. Don't sweat so much those following 10 years.
Yes, it was. It was a theme almost to a person, especially the young women said, I wish I had had more confidence. You know, many of them were really anxious about entering young adulthood. And many of them said, you know, really, it's just a one step at a time. And if you keep learning, you can get through anything.
Thanks, Sue. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger, who's based in Portland. 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Weekend.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Powered by the most trusted name in journalism, you're listening to the Wall Street Journal This Weekend.
Thanks for being with us. Final full weekend in August. Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti coming up this half hour. Why bicycles have gotten so expensive, and the countries that follow the U.S. in videos posted about the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. We'll have that report in about 20 minutes. Seen the price of bikes lately? Wall Street Journal sports reporter Rachel Bachman has a story behind how completely ordinary bicycles have crept over $1,000, and the prices of fancier ones have entered the stratosphere. Rachel, what's going on here?
Well, what we're seeing is really an expansion of the high end. Not only are there more really avid bikers who, you know, compete in races and who really make this a lifestyle, but there are also more expensive materials and components being used in bikes, and the combination is really driving up prices at the high end.
All right, so what are these materials, I guess?
Well, the biggest one is carbon fiber, which is really a space-age substance used to make bike frames, and now it's expanding to things like wheel frames and handlebars and almost anything. And people love this stuff because it's extremely strong but very light.
Yeah,
of course, cyclists love their bikes to be light. And so this is proliferating, but it's very expensive to buy, and it's expensive to manipulate into those shapes.
Okay, so prices are now what from, say, where they used to be?
At specialty bike shops now, road bikes, which are, you know, really the long-distance sleek ones, average about $1,000, which is pretty steep. And at the high end, you can buy a bike that's $10,000, $15,000 and above.
I think I might opt for a motorcycle if I'm going to spend that much money.
Exactly.
Or a quality used car. Jeez. So where has this come from? Is this demand at the high end? Is this more people are cycling these days or what?
Well, ironically, not more people are cycling these days. It's actually in decline in terms of just participation numbers. But the number of people who are participating really avidly is slowly going up. Mm. And so what those people are doing is investing more in bikes. They're spending more time biking. They're just putting their whole lives into it. Some of them buying multiple bikes that cost, you know, $5,000-$10,000 or more.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal sports reporter Rachel Bachman about high-end bicycles and why they're so expensive now. The industry leaders here, Trek, right? Who else? Is Schwinn in there?
Carbondale is more for sort of mass-produced bikes, but Carbondale is certainly Giant.
Oh, right.
Also, there are several other manufacturers that make really, they kind of specialize in high-end road bikes like Cervelo and Felt and a bunch of other companies.
Anybody guess where this is going from here, Rachel?
Well, I think you're seeing some resistance among some riders because the average cost, wholesale cost of a bike, especially bike shop, has gone up about 75% in the last 10 years, which is about three times as fast as inflation. And so, you know, certainly that can't keep up indefinitely. I think you're going to see some pushback. But at the same time, you know, people absolutely love cycling, and the numbers are going up everywhere from mountain biking to cyclocross, which is sort of these off-road races that people do on the weekend, and that's exploding in popularity. And you know, you need a different kind of bike to do that, so they're selling a lot of those.
All right, so it's not just the road bikes. We're seeing the hybrids and the mountain bikes switch to a lot of this more expensive carbon material.
Yes, and really the biggest area of growth is cyclocross, which is super popular in the West and also a few other places in the U.S. And it's just one of those kind of like the Tough Mudder races. You know,
okay.
I think they really make people feel like they've gotten away from it all and really had an immersive experience.
Thanks, Rachel. Wall Street Journal sports reporter Rachel Bachman. 22 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend. Thanks for being with us. So here's just an example of how poor my math can be at times. I think I said earlier that this is the last full weekend in August. It's not. Meanwhile, want to be the life of the party with your iPhone 5? Consider the new infrared camera accessory from FLIR called the FLIR 1. Tech analyst Rob Enderle says it's among the cool military technology you can buy and use these days. Rob, tell us about it.
This is a company that made their fame providing infrared cameras for military vehicles in a variety of wars. They were used to, you know, identify combatants that were off the road, potentially bombs and other things. A very, very powerful technology. And they've adopted it for industrial and home use. And this latest offering goes on an iPhone 5, converts the iPhone 5 to a high-powered infrared camera. And the camera is pretty handy in the home because it can show the stuff that's going on behind the wall. So if you've got a water leak, if you've got if your air conditioning system or heating system is bleeding out either through the ducting or through the windows or doors, it'll identify that. It'll showcase mold because mold tends to be hotter than the surrounding area. It can show you that where mold's growing and other problems like that that can result in significant problems if you don't catch them in time.
Wow. So explain the hardware here. Is this a camera that actually replaces the one you have on your iPhone 5, or it's an attachment?
It's an attachment. So it clips on much like a back to the phone, and the your camera couples into the cameras that are on the FLIR 1. And FLIR 1 has two cameras. It's got an infrared sensor, and it's got a regular camera, and that allows it to take a dual mode picture. That way you can see, you know, both the area that you're looking at and the part that you're concerned about. So the infrared camera shows you what's hot, what's not, and the regular camera shows you, you know, what part of the wall you're looking at. So you can blend the two. Otherwise, you'd have to map the stuff out, because infrared sensors tend to be very low resolution, and you need a high resolution image so you can figure out what you're looking at.
We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle about this James Bond-like iPhone accessory from FLIR. It's an infrared camera. This thing is pricey, though. It's not some $1.99 download, right? This thing's like $350.
Yeah, $350. But it compares to cameras that would otherwise cost upwards of $900 to $1,500. A typical FLIR camera of high quality, I think the cheapest one that got like $899 or something like that. And the one I have in my car, because I have a camera mounted in one of my automobiles, I think it was more like $3,500. So they can be pretty pricey. So compared to what it would typically cost you to buy something like this, it's not bad.
Yeah, boy. And imagine if you were able to get a jump on a potential costly home repair, right? I bet you'd pay up that $350 in a heartbeat when the repairman comes by and tells you it's $2,000 for a plumbing fix.
If you've got a water leak in your wall, that can just do a ton of damage if you don't catch it timely. And, of course, mold its own kind of problem if it starts growing. And then, of course, if you're in a cold or a hot climate, bleeding air conditioning or heating out of your windows, walls, or floors can be pretty costly as well over time. So this really isn't that much compared to the kinds of costs that can save you.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle. That infrared camera he's got mounted on his Jaguar, by the way, can spot deer and moose and other things from like a quarter mile away. 15 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Weekend.
I own a growing company, and predictable monthly expenses make it easier to run my business. That's why I switched to the T-Mobile Simple Choice for Business plan. We get unlimited data with no overage charges, all in America's fastest 4G LTE network. Now it doesn't matter how much data my team needs every month. My bill stays the same. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only, subject to change. Fastest 4G LTE based on download speeds. See T-Mobile.com for details.
Thanks for being with us. In response to calls on campus for changes to how reports of sexual assaults are handled, many schools are stepping up efforts to provide victim support that's confidential, easily accessible, and ongoing. For example, this fall, among other policy changes, Cal Berkeley plans to hire a confidential survivor advocate. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Erica Phillips. Erica, set this up.
For the last couple of years, groups of victims of sexual assault at several campuses across the country, dozens even, have been filing reports with the federal government asking the federal government to investigate their schools for mishandling their cases of sexual assault. They say they've experienced everything from filing reports and never hearing back, or not hearing back for long periods of time, encountering situations where they feel like people don't believe them, getting outcomes in their cases that they're not satisfied with, and just a lot of general complaints about just the resources available to victims of sexual assault on college campuses. So this has been going on for a couple of years. And one thing that schools have begun starting to do, they're, responding, across the board to a lot of these complaints. They've formed task forces. They've involved students in developing new policies for dealing with sexual assault on campus. And schools hiring someone called a confidential advisor or a survivor advocate, which is something that's gaining traction at several schools right now.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Erica Phillips. And what role does the survivor advocate play?
So it kind of fulfills two key things. One is that this person is confidential, and that's been kind of a crucial component A lot of students say they're afraid to come forward sometimes because they feel like once they tell their story to a school administrator, they lose control of it, and they don't know who's going to find out, and they don't know where it's going to go from there. And this is a person that schools are saying, this is going to be confidential. You can have confidence that you go to this person, you tell your story, and it's between you and them, and then they'll help you work through where you want to go from there, whether you want to file a complaint against the school, whether you want to file criminal charges or see a counselor or any and all of the above. And so that's the second piece of it, is really being a person who can guide the victim of sexual assault through each of those resources on the campus and be kind of a nexus for all of those things for that victim.
Thanks, Erica. Wall Street Journal reporter Erica Phillips. It is 9 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend. Once again, here's Gina Cervetti.
The U.S. government this week moved to tighten restrictions on hydrocodone, a narcotic painkiller that's used in Vicodin and Lortab. The move comes as federal data shows that almost 3 out of 4 prescription drug overdoses are tied to opioid painkillers. These drugs will be harder to obtain. This next week, we'll watch for updates on the housing market, and we get a report on orders for long-lasting big-ticket factory items. Also, the second look at economic growth in the second quarter. PNC's Gus Fauché says he expects a 4% growth rate for GDP.
I think we have an economy that is growing nicely. It's not really strong growth, and we would like to see stronger growth to help bring down the unemployment rate. But the economy is expanding, that the second quarter was certainly a solid one.
Reports on personal income, consumer spending, and consumer confidence will also get our attention in the coming days. Jobless claims fell in the latest week. Stuart Hoffman says this was a decent number.
A good set of numbers. This is for the week ending August 16th. We saw unemployment claims fall to 298,000. Anything around 300,000 or under is a good sign for the job market.
Windows 9 may be on the way soon. TheVerge.com reports that Microsoft plans to take the wraps off of its Windows 8 successor at a press event late next month as part of a release codenamed Threshold. Which new cars are revving up consumer interest? Auto Pacific finds that newly redesigned vehicles are big hits. The overall winner with consumers was GM's Chevy Corvette. But the most ideal mid-sized car was the Volkswagen Passat. For economy cars, it was the Ford Fiesta.
All right, thank you, Gina. 7 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend. All right, so how big has the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge grown? It's become a global behemoth, at least according to Facebook. Here are some stats released by the social media site. From the beginning of June to the middle of August, more than 28 million users were talking about it. And during that roughly, 10-week period, 2.4 million related videos were shared on Facebook. Mine's one of them. Gina's is one of them. Mike Gavin's is one of them. Where have we seen the challenge the most, though? The epicenter appears to be Boston. One reason could be the work of Pete Frates, the former Boston College baseball player who was diagnosed with ALS in 2012. If you haven't seen the ESPN feature that's gone viral, by the way, it's worth a look with tissues nearby. How far beyond Boston has this gone? Facebook reports the challenge has reached nearly every country in the world, with the United States the most popular country for posts, followed second by Australia, then New Zealand, Canada, and Mexico. Celebrities taking the challenge, like Bill Gates, Ben Affleck, have helped as well. Mr. Gates got nearly 1 million likes on Facebook and 250,000 shares. Perhaps the most important stat, more than $40 million raised for the ALS Association in that stretch of time, compared to just $2.1 million during the same period last year. For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this weekend.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.